'Tis the Popmatic Podcast
for August 17th, 2016. If brevity is the soul of wit, what does that make us? Coming to you from a pound of flesh, 'tis the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Jeremy, and biting my thumb at you today are...
Bill.
Amanda.
Jan Michael.
The reason we're talking like dummies is because the Nashville Shakespeare Festival runs now to September 18th. So we're going to, today we're going to bust a Capulet in the works of Bill Shakespeare.
Huzzah!
You know Bill, not our Bill. Bill Shakespeare. He was the guy who was in love in Shakespeare in Love. He also wrote all that stuff everybody else bases all their stuff on. And today we're going to talk about some of that stuff. So be sure to check out the show notes for a link to the festival's full schedule where you can go get some culture. Michael?
Now is the winter of our podcast, made glorious summer by another Shakespeare episode.
Good morrow, gang.
Good morrow, Mike.
As I yell into the mic and deafen two people.
If you yell into the mic, are you yelling into yourself?
Whoa, that's deep. Whoa, yeah.
The eclipse, regardless.
How neat to it.
Says our producer.
Wicked bird.
Nice to meet you, Friedrich Nietzsche. Back when we did our last Shakespeare episode, I remembered a great book about Shakespeare about halfway through the podcast, but blanked on the name, so I didn't mention it. Unlike, say, last week, when I could remember Twilight of the Elites and mentioned it anyway. But thankfully, we're doing a ye olde do-over today, so I thought I'd talk about a little book called Reinventing Shakespeare by Gary Taylor. Brief warning, I have fun with semi-academic pop historical analysis. If you're the kind of person who's like Shakespeare is still relevant today, not due to being both a fantastic writer and a series of lucky historical quirks, but only because he's obviously the greatest writer who's ever lived, then maybe this book isn't for you. Its premise is simple. It's both a history and analysis of Shakespeare's legacy and why he is known today when his contemporaries like Ben Jonson and Christopher Marlowe, who also mixed flowery language with drama, are only for English / theater nerds. Faust is the best. It begins with remembrances from his contemporaries after his death, then goes on to the Restoration, where there's a great hunger for drama after the Puritans had banned them all and, like, you know, locked up the theaters and were dour and boring. In the 18th century, Shakespeare became fashionable amongst the literati like Alexander Pope and Samuel Johnson. The Victorians used his works to prove the greatness of English civilization as they conquered the globe. But amusingly enough, they were also fond of heavily censored versions of his works called Baudelaireizing, after Thomas Baudelaire. Some plays were not performed in their original versions in England for over 100 years. I believe King Lear was something like 120 years they didn't play, like, show the actual version. It's just like, oh, he's the best, but only certain parts. Yeah. Good parts.
Don't play with the other stuff.
Yeah, rare.
Just, you know, leave that in the drawer. It's fine.
Yeah. And they also, like, made versions for kids. You know, I think there's a version.
Do Romeo and Juliet make it through okay in the children's version?
Yeah. No, but they're
they
just...
They go to Disneyland at the
frogs.
End.
They're frogs. Yeah. They're frogs.
Oh, okay.
At the end, they hug puppies.
Aww.
And the puppies also die.
Oh, no.
That's what it is. The puppies die, too, so they're embraced together. That's true.
Hey, pox on both your puppies.
Wow.
Playwright George Bernard Shaw hated Shakespeare so much that his last written play, Shakes vs. Chev, was a puppet show featuring the both of them arguing who was the better writer. And guess who wins? Ultimately, my biggest takeaway from the book is that every age and indeed every person interprets Shakespeare and his work differently. Today, the hip thing is remixing multiple things and multiple genres and multiple styles. And people have been doing that to Shakespeare for centuries. And that's why he's the best. Book report over. I come to bury Shakespeare and praise him.
Woo!
Lend me your ears. Jan Bill.
Okay. This is from Macbeth, Act 4, Scene 1. Excuse my line reading. By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. That was the second witch speaking. And
which
the
witch?
The second witch.
just wanted to say which way.
Sorry. Oh, okay. I didn't follow it, so. Where was I? Oh.
Something wicked this way comes.
Okay. The line, something wicked this way comes, is also a novel written by the late, great Ray Bradbury. And this just kind of dawned on me when I was reading it. Pricking of My Thumb, I believe, is a book by Agatha Christie, one of her books. Anyway, back to Ray Bradbury. Something Wicked This Way Comes. The novel is a dark fantasy and in which a traveling carnival comes to a Midwestern town in October, in which the carnival ringleader, Mr. Dark, brings evil to the town. Though the novel has nothing to do with the Shakespeare play other than the title, it's Mr. Shakespeare's work that influences another artist. And here's another example. This is from Hamlet. I am but mad north, northwest. When the wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a handsaw. The part that says north, northwest was the inspiration for the title North by Northwest, the thriller directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
And the Kardashian baby.
Yeah.
That's what their baby's name is, North, and Kanye's last name is West, so she's North.
She's going to have a Northwest. Like a perfume when she's an adult that's going to be North by Northwest.
That's weird.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Yes,
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just had to share that.
That's fascinating.
No, name second baby East or something.
But the name, as celebrity baby names go, North is nice, but paired with West is a little...
That's when it gets creepy.
A little too cute for me.
Look at her weather for her birthday.
My favorite is still Jason Lee's kid, Pilot Inspector.
Is that Jason Lee's or Nicolas Cage?
I think it's Jason Lee.
Nicolas Cage's son is Kal-El.
Okay, Kal-El. I knew he had a weird one,
yeah.
Too. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. We totally derailed.
Sorry, Bill.
That one's super.
We're celebrity.
We could have a whole podcast about that.
We should do an episode about that. That'd be good.
Yeah, obviously so. I'll have to bone up on that.
Oh, bone up is Bono's kid.
Oh, okay. Now he's making that up.
Man.
North by Northwest. Okay. Well, it stars, that was fascinating, though. It stars Cary Grant as an advertising executive, Roger Thornhill, who has been accidentally mistaken for a spy and is chased through New York City, an Illinois cornfield, and to Mount Rushmore. Exciting stuff. There's also Broken Lance, which is another movie, which has been called Bard on the Range.
Here is the ruthless violence and massive destruction that carved the cattle and mining domains out of the flaming West. Brought to the screen through the miracle of CinemaScope and the wonder of stereophonic sound in Broken Lance.
Broken Lance is a 1954 Western that borrows heavily from Shakespeare's King Lear. Instead of a king, it's a cattle baron played by Spencer Tracy. Instead of daughters, the cattle baron has sons. The story deals with a feud in the family. Broken Lance is a well-made western that would be great on a lazy afternoon. The influence of Shakespeare is great, and in doing research, someone wrote that Shakespeare's stories transcend time and culture and have influenced other wide-ranging artists in their work. These three works are good example, and we have them in our library, and pass to Amanda. Amanda.
Bono shouldn't name his kid Sonny.
What's Bono's last name, though? It's like...
Something Irish.
Yeah. McLaughlin.
It's like Cher. No one cares.
Yeah.
Bono.
Sorry. Anyway.
Her son, Greg Allman, is Blue.
Oh.
Named Blue. Blue Allman.
Didn't they want to name him like God or something, but they couldn't get away with it? I think so.
Penn Jillette's name is like Moxie is the kids for
Moxie Crime Fighter.
Moxie Crime Fighter.
We have.
And where are the mothers in this? And they say no.
We have a movie that's name escapes me, but the whole idea is that there's five people in the United States named Adolf Hitler.
I'm sure that's true.
Or Hitler or something like that, you know? So like the first person in there is like Gene Hitler, who's this nice Mormon guy.
You know. Hold on. Okay, so I don't know how it happened, but somehow I was born without the Shakespeare gene.
Oh.
So, you know, I respect his work for what it was, but I would pretty much choose to watch anything or read anything else. But I think that my unlove of Shakespeare actually helped me identify with the main character in Arthur Phillips' book, The Tragedy of Arthur. So the main it's a very interesting book. The main character's name is also Arthur Phillips. And in the book, his fictional father is actually credited with finding a long-lost Shakespearean play, which was called The Most Excellent and Tragical History of Arthur, King of Britain. Huh. So, and then, like, they present, like, the book is presented kind of as this new edition of the published great work. And so then in the introduction, the author slash fictional narrator, Arthur Phillips, explains that how his family came about this book. And then he also adds that he has to tell his memoir, which kind of better helps explain the historical context of this great work that they have found as a family. So fictional character Arthur has a twin sister who, her name is Dana, who at the prompting of their father falls completely head over heels in love with the bard, suffering from what Phillips calls bardolatry. So he, on the other hand, couldn't care less about Shakespeare, and he basically just tolerates their Shakespearean antics while growing up. Like, at one point, their father goes to prison, and for his present, like, his sister recites, she's like eight, recites this, like, whole big thing in Shakespeare, and he's so impressed, and they're all in love, and whatever. So, so now his father, like I said, went to prison because he was a noted forger. Like, it's not only it's kind of just, like, skirted around the edges that he does this other work. He's an artist, but, like, he can't make money as an artist, so he does other tasks. So he spends a lot of time in jail, and then after getting sick, he tells his son and daughter about this, finger quotes, lost play so that they can publish it and make money to support themselves after he dies. Arthur's fictional sister believes that it's real right away. She has no doubt, but Arthur, of course, not loving Shakespeare, is questioning the origin of this. Plus, he knows his father, so he sets out on a quest to kind of summon the story's origin. So the book is as much about Arthur, the fictional character, as it is Arthur, the King of Britain. There's, like, a lot of levels. It's very – you kind of have to let yourself get twisted a little bit. So I've enjoyed Arthur Phillips as a writer, not the fictional character, for a while now. The first book I read of his was called The Song Is You. And I look back on my Goodreads review, and I've read a lot of books about musicians and by musicians, and this one came the closest to doing what I actually wanted it to, because sometimes they just don't quite get it. But I think Phillips has a great voice, and The Tragedy of Arthur, like I said, has many layers. It's obviously a farce, but Phillips refuses to break character. Like, he even kind of gave a few promotional interviews as fictional Arthur Phillips as opposed to real-life Arthur Phillips. The book also reads like a memoir. I don't know how much of it is real and how much of it is not. I tried to see if he actually has a twin sister named Dana, and I didn't say that anywhere. So I have a feeling that she's a creation of his mind. But I do have to admit that I have not quite finished the book because the back half is like the actual
robot.
The actual play. So yeah. Like the first half of the book is the story, and then like the is the actual play, which Phillips has since admitted that he wrote. Sure. But it's in iambic pentameter. Like, it's in full. Like, so it's kind of fancy. It slows me down a little. I kind of have to ponder. So that's fun. So if you don't like Shakespeare, but you're looking for something Shakespeare-ish, this is the book for you. You can also check out other books by Arthur Phillips. He wrote Prague, The Egyptologist, and Angelica, as addition to The Song Is You. He's a great author, and you will not be disappointed.
This actually happened in real life. There was in the 19th century, and I will chide Future Mike to actually look up who this person was.
Thanks, but, Future Mike.
Yeah, you know, as opposed to being lazy and not looking up corrections. But
William Henry Ireland.
This guy, like, claimed that he found a lost Shakespeare play in, like, a trunk, and everybody got really excited, and they're, like, they're rehearsing and stuff. But there's some controversy because it's like, what do you mean you found it in a trunk? You know, that kind of thing.
It was in a trunk, and that's where I found
there's
it.
There's a lot of, you know. And so
pretty self-explanatory.
The night of the premiere, the lead actor, halfway through his monologue, turns around and confronts the playwright on stage and is all like, you know, this is BS. You know, nice. You made all this up. This is garbage. And
like,
it destroyed the guy's,
garbage.
Like, you know, reputation. Because yeah, after that, he's like, so, yeah, I may have made this all up.
And that playwright
was, part of it.
Was Shia LaBeouf's great-great-grandfather. Great-great-great-grandfather.
Transformers 2, Ye Old Revenge of Nine Fallen. I did Transformers 2 wrong again, even though I know it's not the title. And I don't care.
That's fine.
Transformers the second.
Transformers the second.
Still bad.
Primus Optimus.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Let me tell you guys a story.
I love story time. Let me get comfortable.
Yeah, get seated.
Will puppets be involved?
There will be no puppets. I can do some of this.
Hand puppets.
Yeah, specific finger there, gang.
So off the coast of Nova Scotia is a 140-acre island, which has vexed explorers for over 150 years. Long before Lost taught people about being disappointed in island-based mysteries, a tiny Oak Island was home to a mountain of conspiracy theories and tales of buried treasure. So why am I talking about this on our Shakespeare episode?
The Tempest?
No, because, like Oak Island, I've buried something of my own. The lead! One of the many theories that's floated...
I miss Jeremy and his strange tangents.
Like, this is my shock.
Oh, this is... it's been so long.
I moved this paragraph up.
Tell me more. I'm just going to get around the fire and get some popcorn. Yeah.
This paragraph was in a totally different place. I moved it up. So one of the many theories that's been floated about what is actually buried on this island, the treasure, is that it's not gold or jewels, but instead definitive proof that it was English philosopher, statesman, and writer Francis Bacon, not the Stratford-upon-Avon kid, who wrote the most famous plays in the Western canon. So how would such a thing end up on a tiny little island in Nova Scotia? The story goes like this. Early settlers of Oak Island told stories of a dying sailor who claimed that Captain Kidd had buried treasure on the island. And so that kind of got the treasure hunt bug started among people. And then later, while looking for a place to farm, a man came upon a pit, which seemed to match descriptions from the sailor's story. So he dug down a little bit, and after 2 feet, he and his assistants found a layer of flagstones. And then they dug some more, and then they discovered a layer of logs every 10 feet. And then even further down, they found some more flagstones with weird etchings on them. So who put them there and why? So these questions have fascinated countless people over almost 200 years, including Errol Flynn and John Wayne, both of whom invested in digging operations on the island, and President FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who followed the mystery until his death in 1945. Now, actual answers to these questions, what's there and why is it there and is something actually there, have been much more elusive, which is why theories about Oak Island have abounded. So it's variously believed to be home to pirate treasure, the Ark of the Covenant, treasures of the Knights Templar, a vault of Rosicrucian knowledge.
Is it a big island?
No, it's 100.
I feel like they would have run over each other when they're burying
it's 140
all this stuff
acres. It's 140 acres.
Excuse me.
Dang it, I tripped over the Ark of the Covenant again. Will you move that thing?
It's Jimmy Hoffa and Amelia Earhart's plane.
Why do people keep melting on this island when they open that trunk that has those Shakespeare folios in it? So, yeah, and then so one of the things that people say is on this island is Francis Bacon's folios proving that he is Shakespeare.
Sure.
So you can read more about Oak Island in general and then this Shakespeare thing as well in Stephen Soar's The Lost Treasures of the Knights Templar, Solving the Oak Island Mystery. Soar writes that the idea that Shakespeare wasn't Shakespeare comes from a man named James Wilmot, who was a British clergyman who in the 1770s decided he wanted to write a book about his favorite writer, William Shakespeare. So he visited Shakespeare's birthplace and found that no one had any stories about him. And then
1770s?
Like the, yeah.
Like people.
It was 100 years after his
old.
Yeah. Like, it was 100 years after his death. Yeah. He found no stories about Shakespeare. But there was also no library left behind by this brilliant, brilliant man. So, you know, he wrote about all these amazing, this broad range of topics about with history and poetry and whatever, and but there was no library, and so you know, how could such a man write such stuff without having a library? So he ignored the fact that Shakespeare had been dead for a century and concluded that a more worldly man must have written those all those profound works, and then he decided it was Francis Bacon. So Francis Bacon... Francis Bacon wrote about science, literature, philosophy, legal writings, and he lived from 1561 to 1626. Shakespeare lived from around 1564. That was the year he was baptized. The actual date of his birth is uncertain. So it's possible he could have been born in 1561. Was he baptized as a three-year-old? But he died in 1616, 10 years before Bacon did. So, intriguing! So you can read more about Oak Island in another book we have called Oak Island Gold by William S. Crooker and The Money Pit, The Story of Oak Island and the World's Greatest Treasure Hunt. You can also...
They made a movie out of that, didn't they, with Tom?
The Money Pit, yeah. I mean, that's about a house. But, yeah, but it's a
Tom
reference.
Hanks is...
that's like Tom Hanks. I couldn't
Shakespeare's
yes.
Movie.
It's an iambic pentameter.
Yeah, that's awesome. Right. That was my Tom Hanks impression. You can also watch The Curse of Oak Island on the History Channel to find out what happens when a midlife crisis hits dudes who don't really care about young women.
That's a terrible
cars.
Show.
Yeah. So those guys are
part
brothers.
Of that, the gym. Those guys are morons.
So like they're digging, and the thing with this money pit is like it keeps flooding with water. Like, but there's stuff down there. They found tools and stuff. So, but like, but they believe that there's like some sort of like. That like it like the whole thing is like a big siphon that siphons in ocean water to flood. So like it's like booby trapped. But at this point, the booby traps are like 200 years old or something. Yeah. But also they found that people claim to have found coconut fibers on the island, but coconut is not on this island in Nova Scotia. So I mean, that's I first
so
read
far
about
we're
this.
Still a ways off from like Judge Crater holding a copy of like Thomas Bacon or whatever
Francis Bacon's
signature on, you know, Hamlet, you know.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I first read about this in an article in Rolling Stone like 13 years ago, and I was like, what is on this? And I love like global conspiracies that date back to the. I love stuff like that. I don't necessarily put any faith in it, but I also think it's fascinating. And I love that randomly, like there is the Oak Island is sort of peripherally connected to this Shakespeare, wasn't Shakespeare thing, but there is a quack school of academia,
the
I guess.
Anti-Stratfordians?
Yeah, I guess so. Is that what they're called?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The Bardolatrists.
There's also another guy that they said wrote him, but he was dead before the end of Shakespeare's career. So they had this whole, like, you know, he had to have written these plays and then handed them. You know, he wrote like 10 plays and handed them to his fall guy Shakespeare and then croaked. You know?
That's amazing. I love stuff like that. So, I mean, I would read books about Oak Island and watch Ancient Aliens all day if I could. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy. Sorry, a little late.
That's
we
cool.
got Bill.
Yeah.
What do we do on...
Outtake.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it.
Maybe the library doesn't,
but either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Mystery podcaster named Bill?
Oh, well, Tickling My Fancy is an adaptation of John le Carré's novel, The Night Manager. Ooh. This was a six-part miniseries that aired on AMC earlier this year. I highly recommend it. It stars Tom Hiddleston, Hugh Laurie, Elizabeth Debicki, and Olivia Colman. Tom Hiddleston plays Jonathan Pine, a night manager of a Cairo hotel. He gets involved with a local woman who is the girlfriend of a local gangster. Through her relationship with the gangster, she has an acquired information linking illegal international arms sales with an English billionaire played by Hugh Laurie. The library has ordered the DVD for our collection. Oh, you can put it on hold now. I highly recommend it, The Night Manager.
Cool.
Nice.
Amanda.
Okay, so we've had a few, I don't want to say weird fancy tickles, but I think that all of us agree that to some point some things have been pretty far out there, but I'm shooting for the stars on this one. I think this might be the weirdest one yet we've ever recommended.
Oh boy, oh boy.
Challenge.
I'm excited. Is this better than that cleaner for your floors that you recommended?
Yes. I think so. It's more enjoyable.
What about cookie butter?
So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me tell you what it is, and then we'll have to determine if it's.
I just kicked it.
Okay. So I have Spotify on my phone, which is not the weird part, and I'm cheap so that I have the free version. So this means that every four songs or so, I get to listen to some commercials.
Perfect.
So usually this is annoying and the commercials are dumb. But lately, Geico has had two commercials that I'd almost rather listen to instead of the song. So
wow.
So the first one I heard, like I'm listening to it, and it goes, block, block, meow, meow, dance with me, purple cow, over this like techno beat. And so here, take a listen to it.
Cow, block, block, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your moves.
What? What? What is that? So this commercial, like the claim is that Geico makes more sense than popular Swedish dance tunes. So, which, you know, we've talked about Max Martin and we've talked about lyrics that don't make sense. So the announcer's probably right, but the song was still catchy. Like, it stays in my head. So then there's a second one that's kind of in the same vein, but now we're trying to understand why heavy metal singers are so mad when Geico is so easy to use. So listen to this one.
And I'm loud! Roar!
Geico Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything!
Like at the end, he's like, I'm not even mad about anything! He's just like screaming, and it's awesome. So this one isn't quite as enjoyable as Purple Cow, but I still think it's funny. Others don't always agree. Like one of the message boards I was reading hounded Spotify for letting Geico have some guy scream at her all the time. And she said she was going to cancel her Spotify service if they didn't stop. But as for me, I laugh every, like I stop what I'm doing and listen to this 30-second commercial great. Like every time.
Why is this song coming up on my Sarah McLachlan station?
It's like more Purple Cow. So, you know, I'm not going to buy their product, but I do enjoy their advertising.
That's great.
Wow. Well, I mean, I do kind of miss that about the radio, that, like, sometimes they have really funny commercials that I would...
I mean, 97% are just horrible and stupid, garbage. But yeah. Like, every sometimes now and again, you get a Purple like, Cow. And
yeah.
The times I used it, I was listening to, you know, music that I like, and then it would come up on the new album from crappy indie band. And I'm like,
I like their old album.
Dad Rock is back.
It's
the most popular album since the last Dad Rock album.
How could you make fun of Steely Dan that much? I pay for Spotify because they whipped out the one thing that Mike would pay money for, and that's listening to things consecutively in order. You can't listen to a CD from beginning to end. You have to do randomize everything.
You can on a computer, but you can't on your cell phone.
That fills Mike with rage.
I stopped using it because of that.
Yeah.
I will
pay $10 a month.
Playlists. Like, I don't ever listen to, like, albums.
Yeah. So. I'm an album guy.
I would, if I listened to more albums, I would have that trouble, too. But
I like listening to my own playlist, my own Hodor. Well, gang, I really want to recommend some more Brazilian things for the Olympics, but I'm going to delay them yet again, because I stayed up late last night playing the best video game I've seen in years. Yeah, press play for my heart. Let me set the scene. I remember way back at E3 2013, a developer taking the stage to say that his team had three big influences in making the game, and I was all like, let me guess, aliens, the beginning of Empire Strikes Back, and oh yeah, aliens, but instead, he said... Asimov, Heinlein, and Clark, and my mind is blown, y'all. Oh boy, longtime listeners know that old timey sci-fi is my jam, yo. I actually wrote that too. I also wrote down the motion I just made.
Ad-lib longtime listeners?
No. I like doubly saying that now because he said that's garbage.
I know, I like that. I just like that you put an S at the end of it.
Longtime listener, oh.
Yeah.
I kid about only liking killing stuff in games, and really my favorite part of playing video games is exploring things. I've been told watching me play games is super boring because I overturn every rock looking for precious secrets. Where's my secrets? I spent more time in Grand Theft Auto 3 looking for hidden packages than I did killing hookers and carjacking. Crazy talk.
What is wrong with you?
Wow.
I know.
I just want to blow stuff
weird,
up.
Weird looks from people. Why didn't you set that crowd on fire, Mike? Because I was looking for a hidden package in the alleyway.
I had to pick their pockets first.
Yeah, you could do that. Anywho, the game that came out on August 9th is called No Man's Sky. And it's all about exploring alien planets and it has this old-timey science fiction aesthetic and the graphics. Oh, you can name all the aliens that you see, all the like creatures and like the plants and stuff. You could trade with alien civilizations and learn their cultures and languages. I explored a frigid hellscape for like 4 hours last night, cataloging all their forests, making content with ancient civilization and stuff. And like, you know.
You're such a librarian.
That was the best. I was like, I could name this Mike's Forest 1 or Mike's Forest 2.
Hey, Mike, what'd you do when you went home? Oh, catalog.
It was great.
Catalog trees.
I was born for this. Put this in my memoir.
These were purchased with juvenile funds.
Kids these days. I didn't kill anything. It was great. I'm in love. Exclamation point. No Man's Sky.
That's awesome. Right now. I want to get that... Nintendo mini thing that's
coming
out.
Oh, yeah, Nick's up my husband.
Yeah, me too.
I've
got Punch Out on it.
I've fallen for the plug and play thing a bunch of times before, and like I had a Genesis one that was pretty good.
I had
an
Atari one
that was good. I had one with Miss Pac-Man, Pole Position, like arcade, and it was good. The Genesis one had the like three Sonic games on it, and I think Golden Axe 1 and like a couple other games. But like, I don't know, I just didn't play it that much. But like, that Nintendo one is like,
it looks cool.
Damn tempting. Yeah. And it's going to have like save points and stuff. So, like, places where you can save things
cool.
and stuff. And it's also, it's going to be formatted or whatever. I'm talking outside of my knowledge. So it looks good on big TVs, you know?
Yeah, like, it's going to have an HDMI.
Yeah,
exactly.
They all had little 13-inch when we first originally came out.
Exactly.
Mario was like half an inch big.
Yeah, like I never played the Zelda games and I never played Final Fantasy.
You never played Zelda? Oh, get out.
Listen, you're fired. Here's the
wow,
thing.
Wow, dude.
Big, giant dork. Hated stuff like that.
What?
Hated it.
Huh.
Because I had a friend who was like, sit here and watch me play Final Fantasy for 3 hours. Well, I was like, you suck! Let's comics!
I'm sure that was exactly how the conversation went.
We tried to play, he liked comics too, and we tried to play a role-playing game, and he was like, okay, you go into a room, what do you do? And I'm like, I leave the room, and he goes, you can't leave the room. And I was like, this sucks! This is stupid! Like, I should
don't
be able to do it.
Don't Zork play Zelda.
Well,
there's a difference.
Yeah.
Robin Williams named his daughter after Zelda.
30 games.
Yeah. That's
no great. Contra. Disappointment.
Oh, no Contra.
No Contra.
I like that one.
But the three Mario games.
Yeah.
That's worth it right there.
Greatest games of all time.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm talking about. Tickling my fancy this week, a couple weeks ago, since I haven't been here in a couple weeks, I've read a few books. There's a pair of books that are sort of not companion pieces to one another, but sort of read well side by side. The first is The Vision, Little Worse Than a Man by Tom King and Gabriel Hernandez Walta. This is about The Vision from Marvel Comics. Perhaps you know him as the guy that wore a sweater in the Captain America movie or whatever. He's the red-faced robot guy. This is a book.
I only know the Martian Manhunter.
Yeah. The Vision, this book is about Vision creating a robot family and moving out to the suburbs, and they get persecuted by people, and it is dark and sad and kind of funny, but also like really cold and detached the way you might imagine an android to be. And it's,
or perhaps an evil robot.
Yeah, or perhaps an evil robot. Evil robot might like this one even. The second is Scarlet Witch, Witch's Road by James Robinson, Marco Rudy, Frank Martin, and Chris Visions, which is sort of funny.
Mm.
The reason that I would say that they're companion pieces, even though they don't touch each other continuity-wise, is because Vision and Scarlet Witch were once married, which is weird enough as it is. So
he had the brains of Wonder Man.
Yeah, that's
how
true.
Bad could it be?
That's true, yeah. These books are like stylistically different than a lot of superhero books. They sort of give a look at the chances, stylistic chances and thematic chances that are sort of being taken at Marvel these days. There's magic and horror and existential ennui. And I really liked them. Check them out. Corrections!
Corrections!
Anyone have any corrections?
I have some corrections.
Okay.
For once, I was wrong.
Oh.
So I said last week Michael Phelps has a daughter. He does not have a daughter.
Oh, it's Boomer!
Son. Yes.
But to be fair, Boomer on Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, was a female. So I understand why you would...
So, and I also wanted to give you an update. So I talked about Anthony Irvin last week, and so he actually swam the anchor leg for the men's 4x100 relay in the prelims. He didn't do it in the final. He did it in the prelims, so you didn't see him on TV unless you were watching all day like I was. So they ended up being seeded second going into the final, and then Michael Phelps swam the second leg of the final. Nathan Adrian was the anchor, and the men ended up winning gold, so Irvin will get a medal.
Gold.
And I should also note that the delightful Russians came in fourth.
Those dopes.
Happy Olympics.
Sheesh.
They've gotten booed every swim. Even the announcers are shocked by how much the crowd hates them.
You don't normally see boo. I know! Rowdy Gaines is my hero.
I love Rowdy Gaines.
Rowdy Gaines. Mike said, this is not a correction, a correction. You said that the Jimmy Cliff song, I Can See Clearly Now, is on Hoopla, but you can also find it on Freegal, an evil robot, only linked to the Freegal version. So there's some confusion there. Also, it's too bad I wasn't here because I could have told you the story about the date that I went on in 1993 to see Cool Runnings.
Oh.
Double feature. Come for Cool Runnings, stay for Free Willy, which I did not want to see, but hey, I paid for a ticket, right? My date left and went to some sort of music thing in a park, and I stayed and watched Free Willy by myself.
Oh,
so
wah, wah.
Anyone? So
there's
for
a joke there, but
yeah.
I'm not going to touch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there's a joke I really want to say.
Oh!
Really, really.
Willie isn't free. For
much like a bear.
Yes. For more information about my sad love life, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
The show was edited by an evil robot.
You can subscribe to the Popmatic podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Please do that next week.
This dubious week.
We Pompeii our respects to volcanoes.
We'll blow our tops.
I like to pretend that Allie Raisman is an alien.
Is that the dude with the weird hair?
That is a girl.
Allie Raisman is a gymnast.
Oh.
They won the gold medal last night.
I wonder what the dude with the weird hair thing is.
Oh, George Tsoukalos?
That guy.
Yeah, the alien. I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens. That's Giorgio Tsoukalos. Tsoukalos. He's the publisher of Legendary Times magazine.
So far, all I've watched at the Olympics is like the rugby match.
You should have watched the bike race. Was the best.
Ooh.
They wrecked. Like, the people in the lead on both the men's race and the women, like, they were, like, less than 100 kilometers from the end and, like, going downhill and they all wrecked.
Wow, cool.
It was awesome.
Oh, I thought you meant wrecked as in they crushed it.
No, they, like, crashed their bicycles.
Wow, cool.
Like, the Dutch chick didn't move. Like, she just, like, hit the
Susan
curb
told
and, like,
this.
Lay there.
Or, like, the American, she went over the handlebars and she didn't move for, like, and Susan and her husband thought that
I thought she was
literally
dead. I really did. I thought she was dead. I thought she broke her neck and she was dead.
I thought, Katie Ledecky winning by like two
half
lengths.
Half a pool length.
My God.
Five seconds.
Did you see that girl, the British girl, Ellie Downing, who landed on her
neck?
She landed
on her head and came back and vaulted.
Yeah.
And she was in the competition last night, too.
Oh, my God.
Like she was flipping, and like, if this is her head, like she landed like that on her neck, like her whole body weight landed on her neck.
And she got up and then
tried
kept
to
doing her routine.
And like she
and
was
going to
do the last tumbling pass, and she went, I can't.
You can't.
It was
intense.
And like her sister's on the team, too. Like her sister was there, and like her sister's like bawling. And then she just walks back up and goes, I'm going to go vault now.